So today is June 8, 2050, in Sasana era 2559. So Dhamma talk shall be prepared for the yogis who are practicing intensively here at TMC will be related to the benefits of one of the benefits of meditation, that is to overcome mental distress or unhappiness. So in the beginning of the sutra itself, the Buddha mentioned by developing continuous mindfulness, one can overcome mental distress. So today, Seattle would like to expound how we can develop the continuous mindfulness and to overcome the mental distress. So dhammasa means mental distress or unhappiness. It is an unwholesome mental state that arises in our mind. Last time, Seattle talked about the physical distress, physical pain. So as regarding mental distress, so whoever we may be, so all living beings, from time to time, they encounter the mental distress or unhappiness. So it is very important for all of us how to overcome the mental distress. So correct method is very important so that we can enjoy the blissfulness. So here in the world, there are some people, they are extremely unhappy or sad, sorrowful, that they even committed suicide. So that's obviously because they don't know how to overcome mental distress. So in the news or media, we can find the people who are very rich, but for some reason they encounter mental distress and they don't know how to overcome it. And so they simply suffer mental distress. So here in this sutra, the Buddha explicitly mentioned how the best method, how to overcome mental distress. In this regard, Seattle would like to tell you a story of a deva, a deity, during the Buddha time. So during the Buddha times, there was the deity named Subrahma. So Subrahma deity was a very powerful deva. He was attended by 2,000 the female deities. One day, they enjoy the pleasure in a heavenly garden called Nandavana. And then there were several kinds of flowers. So they pick up the flowers and they adorn the prince and the deva. And then they entertain him in several ways, singing and dancing and so on. So meanwhile, the 500 deities, devi, they disappeared. So they very quiet. Then the deva found out what happened, what's going on. And then he found out the 500 devis, they were born in the hair. So he was so shocked by this event. And at the same time, check himself and the Romanian devotees, and he found out his fate. He and all the Romanian devotees are also going to be reborn in the same hair. So he was extremely scared. So he looked for someone to take refuge in. There is nobody on earth to take refuge in to help him except the Buddha. Only the Buddha can help him. So he just imagined how much they scared by their fate. So here, when we are scared by the fate, this kind of fate, we happen to develop the Sanvega in Pali, that means sense of urgency. So Sanvega is very helpful to develop Dhamma. When we get Sanvega, sense of urgency, normally we find where to go, who to approach, to take refuge in. Otherwise, we forget and enjoy sincere pleasure when we find something, truth, and then we feel Sanvega, sense of urgency. And then we remember to go to the monastery or the temple and so on. So that's why they are saying, so unless you have Sanvega, sense of urgency, you better not practice. You may not be successful in the practice. But if you have Sanvega, you will definitely put great effort in the practice. So Sanvega, sense of urgency, is kind of driving force behind our heroic effort in the practice. So last time Seattle talked about the Siddha Manla, the ex-boxer, he ordained as a monk and became fully enlightened. And when he got shot by the arrow, so when he shoot with the arrow, he know he was going to die soon. So he got the Sanvega, sense of urgency, and then he made great effort until he became enlightened. So in similar way, one of the meditators here, he reported his sense of urgency because he's getting older and older, closer and closer to the death. So he feels sense of urgency, so he make great effort in the practice. So regarding Sanvega, sense of urgency, there are four kinds of the scary feeling or Sanvega. And Sanvega is defined as a scary feeling accompanied by knowledge or wisdom-based feeling. Wisdom-based scary feeling. Wisdom-based fright. So Sanvega is basically four, and this kind of scary feeling is four kind. The first one is called Chaitrodra Sanvega. This is fright caused by something scary, like accident or disaster, like earthquake, or something scary, scary sight or sound, and so on. So this kind of fright is a passive form of anger. This is actually unwholesome mental state. And the second kind of the Sanvega, second kind of fright is arises when we listen to the Dhamma talk and we realize the truth, something true. And then we feel sometimes frightened. That's what we call jnana samvega, the fright caused by understanding or caused by wisdom. Wisdom generated fright, jnana samvega. And then number three is uddhava samvega. This is related to the evil deed. The virtuous people, they are always scared or ashamed or evil deed, to do evil deed. So when they see other people committing evil deed, they feel really scared. And that kind of fright is called the uddhava samvega, the sense of urgency generated or aroused by the moral conscience. And then the last one is dhamma samvega. This kind of dhamma samvega is more related to the meditator, vipassana meditator. So it takes place when a yogi see or discern mind and matter or mental and physical phenomena. There are changes arising and passing away. There are impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and a lack of ego, just ego or soul. Only the mental and physical phenomena divide I or mind. So when we see or discern psychophysical phenomena, divide I or mind, we feel frightened. That kind of fright is called dhamma samvega, dhamma related fright. So of course the first one is unwholesome, the rest three is wholesome samvega, the sense of urgency. So frightened by the coming fate, the deva subrahma, he approached the Buddha. He came down to the earth and approached the Buddha, raised a question. The Venerable Sir, the Blessed One, me and my 500 the deities encounter really unfortunate fate. So we are going to reborn in the hell. We were really frightened. We are really frightened by that fate. So can you kindly teach me any good method to overcome this kind of fate? So the Subhyama deity, he approached the Buddha and asked question. Then the Buddha answered his question. There is four things the Buddha mentioned in this dhamma, brief dhamma talk. The first one is without the Eightfold Noble Path, there is no other way to reach the happiness.
Now the Guga Mimi Dhanama Pinida Kilidario Abu Dide Uriya Suretya Mashivene Shandaya Miyanaimahu.
So there can be no happiness available unless you practice sense restraint or the other kinds of the virtues, four kinds of virtues, or especially sense restraint, impossible to gain happiness. So there's no way for you to experience happiness unless you make great effort in realization of Nirvana, where there is no more mental defilements, which are totally responsible for mental distress for all living beings. So this is the order of teaching, but in order of practice. So to experience Nirvana, first of all, we have to practice sense restraint with a great effort, what is called tapa, and develop the continuous mindfulness up to or until we experience the body. Body means the Eightfold Noble Path or Fivefold Preliminary Path. So when we trace our unhappiness to its origin, we can find their source, where our mental distress comes from seeing or hearing, smelling, eating, touching, or thinking. So unless we truly aware of them as they really are, then unhappiness or mental distress is unavoidable. So we have to guard our senses against a negative mental state. So there's six sense doors, eye door, ear door, and so on. So when we see, we should be at that moment of seeing, we should be aware of seeing. We should not go beyond that. And when we hear, we should be aware of hearing. We should not go beyond that. And then in the same way, we should practice when we smell, taste, touch, or think. So in this way, we can practice restraint on senses. So let's analyze seeing mental process. So seeing is actually includes many mental processes. Normally, our seeing is always under illusion. So to elaborate a little bit more, so when we see, there is a seeing mental process. Seeing mental process normally at least includes four mental processes. First, we just see a mental process only. We just see nothing else. And then we review a mental process. What is what we just see? We review it. And that's a reviewing mental process. We call Tatanu Vudika Manodwara. And then we analyze what is it, what we are seeing. Is it white or black, or thin or fat, or tall or short? And we analyze, we define the shape or the form or the object. And then we remember the name of the object we see. So any seeing process, especially when we see something new, and then our seeing at least require these four mental processes. So generally, there is four mental processes involved in seeing. So among them, the first two mental processes. So the first one is we experience the visible object. So at this moment, what we see is just real phenomena. So it's a paramattha, ultimate phenomena. And through the second mental process, we review it. We review the visible sight, visible object. So this mental process also take the mental process as its object. So it's still, we are aware of still paramattha, ultimate reality. But the third process and the fourth process, the third process we define or we identify, oh, this is someone, or white, or black, or beautiful, something like this. We identify shape or form as somebody or something, then we start to experience, we start to see the conceptual concept we call panyati, and then name also panyati. So when we is through the awareness of panyati or concept, we start to develop the unwholesome mental state or desire or discontent and so on. So based on the concept, we develop or we arouse the unwholesome mental state. So different people have different concept, different way of thinking. So there will be different between the people, and some people they identify the same thing as good, some people as bad, something like this. So for example, when we were young or when we were children, we liked something, we loved something. But when we grown up, for example, we are at the middle age, and we no longer love the things we used to love when we were a child. And when we get even older, oh, we no longer love when we have ever loved, when we used to love as a child or as a middle-aged man, and so on. So the objects and like and dislike are changing, will be different from one people, from one to another. However, every moment, every time we see, there is no, there arise not always unwholesome state. Depending on our mindset, there can be the seeing can be wholesome or unwholesome, or seeing can arouse wholesome mental state or unwholesome mental state. So when we think about or when we recollect the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, or when we think about the Dhamma, and depending on our wholesome mindset, we develop the wholesome mental state. So among the four mental processes, the third and the fourth, the third, through the third mental process, we identify the object as someone or something, and with the fourth mental process, we identify the name. So the last two is number three and number four. They take the concepts as their object. So actually, what we see is certain kinds of physical phenomena, visible physical phenomena. And what is seen is a physical phenomena, and the eye through which we see is also physical phenomena. And seeing or seeing consciousness is a mental phenomena. So if we are aware of these mind and matter or mental and physical phenomena that are arising at the moment of seeing, there is wisdom, there is insight. Otherwise, we see, or what we see is someone we know, someone so and so, or is someone lovable or despicable, someone we hate, someone we love, and these are all illusion. Based on this illusion, based on these concepts, there arises mental defilements. So for the yogis to remember is dhiti, dhita, mata, and bhavesati. So when we see, we should be aware of the seeing. should not go beyond that. So there are four mental processes. So the last two are related to illusion. The last two is elusive mental processes. Through these processes, we identify passing or things and good or bad, desirable or undesirable. But through the first two mental processes, like just seeing or reviewing, that's the paramatha. We just experience the real phenomena. What we see is a visible form or visible phenomena, and there is an eye through which we see, and a seeing consciousness. Here are all the real phenomena we call paramattha, ultimate phenomena. So when we are sitting, for example, during the intensive retreat, sometimes we may imagine or we may fancy we see someone we love. And then we should note it as it is, like seeing. Otherwise, lustful feeling will come in. But even though we note it, seeing, this kind of thought may recur or come back because we are deeply attached to someone we love. But we have to note it as long as the thought coming in. And in the same way, that sometimes we see or we fancy we see someone we hate. And then also we should note seeing, otherwise the anger or aversion coming in. So we have to observe seeing, the moment we see. Only then can we discern the real phenomena involved in the seeing process. So there is a visible phenomena, visible form, and physical phenomena in the eyes, and seeing consciousness. These are real phenomena. If we observe seeing the moment we see, we can discern these real phenomena, and we can guard our senses against mental defilement. That is what the Buddha means, Indriya Samvara, the sense restraint. So now time is up. So Sierra, we continue this Dhamma talk tomorrow. In conclusion, Sierra, wish may all of you be able to practice continuous mindfulness and progressive vipassana insight until megaphala enlightenment and nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu.